I'm really fans of everybody working to make us be in alignment better with planet Earth and the universe. I think it's really clear that humanity as a whole is not very well right now, and not very cooperative with the planet and the universe. We're all needing to learn these really complex lessons right now. So I think generational, intergenerational dialogue between cultures of people is really important, so we can keep seeing ourselves in each other and other species on the Earth.
You're listening to The Rhythm of Rebellion with Taina Asili. Welcome to another episode of The Rhythm of Rebellion. I'm your host, Taina Asili, and today we have the privilege of diving into the boundless world of music and activism with the ever-brilliant visionary, Toshi Regan. Toshi's extraordinary journey through the world of music has not only left an indelible mark on the sonic landscape, but has also become a force for unity and change. She's a singer, composer, and musician, and master of genres that span from folk to funk, blues to rock, and beyond. She's also a curator, producer, and mentor. Toshi's unique ability to move seamlessly between musical genres and create melodies that carry the essence of human experiences has earned her a distinguished place among musicians and activists. Her expansive career has led her to iconic venues like Carnegie Hall, the Paris Opera House, and Madison Square Garden. But you'll just as easily find her gracing the stages of music festivals, intimate venues, and local clubs. One of the most remarkable facets of Toshi's career is her groundbreaking work, Parable of the Sower, a congregational opera based on Octavia E. Butler's seminal novel, which Toshi co-created with her mother, Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan. Toshi's passionate engagement with Octavia E. Butler's themes of Afrofuturism and their striking relevance in today's political landscape culminated in this unique and transformative theatrical performance. This powerful project had its world premiere at NYU Abu Dhabi's Art Center in 2017 and has continued to make a profound impact, including a recent performance at New York City's Lincoln Center that I had the pleasure of seeing twice. Toshi also co-hosts the Octavia's Parables podcast with renowned author Adrienne Marie Brown, where they delve into Octavia E. Butler's works, offering listeners guiding questions for applying the lessons in their own lives and community work. Moreover, Toshi has been a mentor to artists like myself, and I've had the incredible honor of collaborating with her multiple times. We first crossed paths when I was recording on Climbing Poetry's album Intrinsic, which Toshi was producing. Our connection deepened as she invited me to perform at the historic Women's March on Washington, and she has since invited me to perform with her and Big Lovely many times. I can't say enough about how Toshi has influenced me as a songwriter and performer. It is a great privilege to have her on today's show to share some of the wisdom behind the unparalleled role that music has played in her world and ours. Hi, Toshi. Welcome.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Taina. How are you?
I am so blessed. It has been such a dream to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm in Brooklyn, New York, kind of getting over a cold. The sun is shining, you know. Personally, well, I'm of course heartbroken like everybody else over all the violence that is happening in the world unnecessarily. So yeah, dealing with
it is definitely heavy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that we center in this conversation is how we can use our music, our skills, our creative facets to be a contribution towards justice, towards liberation, towards healing. So you know, just centering us in that place as we move through this conversation. I wanted to just start off our conversation by talking a little bit about your earlier history. You have such a deep, long, beautiful history of life. So I wanted to see if you could share a window into how your upbringing in a family deeply involved in the civil rights movement and guided by the influential work of your mother, Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan, how that helped shape the content and sound of your songwriting today?
I would just more say it helped shape me versus like the specifics of my songwriting. I was really little. So, you know, a lot of times people think I was in the Freedom Singers or I was in the Civil Rights Movement. And I was like, I was a baby. So, you know, so it's more just being in a circle of really vibrant, you know, people who were young in their lives of being adults. You know, my parents probably met when they were like 18 and 19. I was born when my mom was 21. So there was a really vibrant community of, you know, aunts and uncles and you know, all kinds of like, just was just very, very, very organic and vibrant. And I just, I've been held by everybody, you know, it was a real like, here's the baby, like, you know. And I think I was one of the first babies of that like generation of people, the first grandchild on my mom's side. So I got to experience what I call now like spiritual confirmation. You know, I think for my grandparents, me being that next generation after their kids made them feel like they did something right. Right? Like that their sacrifice was worth it. And I think for my parents, it was like this idea of like growing beyond yourself. Like, not only are you having this responsibility for your contemporary time, but for a future of your own children. And then in both of those communities, there was always music. So when my grandparents in Albany, you always went to church with my grandma and my aunts. And it was a real singing family. So, you know, my cousin Kabanya, who's like 7 years younger than me, like 2 years old, started playing piano. But all my aunts had beautiful voices, and my uncle Tosu was a Yoruba priest. You know, like it just was a lot of richness. My dad's a great singer, and in Nashville side of my family, it's a lot of really great singers in that family. So I was pretty surrounded by music, but also by the comfort of people who looked at you like you were the sun. Like they just were really nice to me. As a baby and as a young kid, and really took care of me, really protected me. And that is like, that's a feeling I carry with me always, is that I'm right. I'm just right. I'm just great. I'm just like, they told me all the time, is I've never let it go, no matter what. I've just been like, I'm these people's child, and I'm in my perfect time, and I'm in my extension of living. Many of them are dead now, and I feel like I'm a continuation of their spirits.
Oh, that's so beautiful. What a blessing. And I love this idea of your existence being a spiritual confirmation. I definitely feel like I can relate to that in some ways for myself, and even more so I see it in my children, like that spiritual confirmation. I don't know if I felt that same feeling of I am right. Although I was very loved, I was trying to find my own voice. And so for me, that started off in punk rock. I don't know if you and I have ever talked about that, but doing punk rock originally.
Yes.
How did you find your unique voice?
I mean, I think I always had it. I don't remember a time where I was like, and now you have your voice. I just had it. A lot of times parents ask me, you know, How do I get my kid? But you have kids, so you know, they come out being who they are. And I'm like, don't mess them up.
Truth.
You know, like, don't mess them up. Like, they, you know, they need guidance, and they need, you know, they need to know where they are. But I think really particularly my mom was just astonished by me. Like, she tells me stories about different things I did when I was really little. Like, she told me that she would use a wrap to wrap me around when I was a baby. And then I would lean back as far as I could and look at the look at what's up. And she was like, yeah, you really hurt my side, but I felt like you really needed to look at the sky. I just never knew why. You know, I still am like, you know, I have a kite in my car. And I still like... You know, there'll be pictures I post that are just the color of the sky I just happen to look at. I'm still like that. I can't remember too many times when my mom told me to shut up.
Yeah.
Like in a way that would be devastating to me. I just literally can't remember. I'm sure she did, right? Because I'm sure she did. She didn't play, but I don't remember it, which means whatever way she was communicating for me to be quiet was a way that she was saying, you need to be quiet in this moment versus your voice does not need to be heard. And she took me everywhere. Me and my little brother, she took us everywhere. So we went to concerts and we just went places with her. And then I think her career started to shift and we got older and started to have our own lives. Then she let us stay at home and have somebody watch us and further develop, you know, who we are. But I think that's important that you you take your kids places, you let them have room to do those things. So that really helped. She also communicated really clear that I don't know how your family is with music, but with our family, everybody's musical. Like it just, you know, this Yoruba priest did a reading on my families and they said, everybody's a priest or a musician. They're like, no matter what they're doing, you know? So there's a lot of singing people and things. And so that kind of communication was like regular versus so I didn't have to discover my voice. It was just always there and always around me through the voices of people around me. And then everybody has different careers, but they can also sing or they can also play something or they, you know, so it's really interesting. I think I would use the words grow or get, you know, start to get good at something. You know, I remember when I started to get good at recording or I started to get good at, you know, being able to record all of the tracks of a song with all the instruments I know how to play. I get good at being a band leader, getting better at those things, learning the craft of different things, learning the craft of booking, learning the craft of presenting and producing. Those are the things I reach for and really intentionally feel like I was okay, I want to get good at this.
You are.
I'm good at
this. Getting a chance to witness it.
Thank you.
Speaking of all the good things you do, I wanted to see if we could move into Parable. You created with your mom, Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan, Parable of the Sower, the congregational opera based on Octavia E. Butler's novel. And it has such a profound impact. I had the blessing of getting to finally witness it at Lincoln Center. I wanted to see if you could talk a little bit about your vision behind this work and how you used music and storytelling to create an immersive experience, because it really is very immersive. When I watched it, I felt like I was really in it and there was so much engagement with the audience. So I wanted to see if you could talk a little bit about your vision and approach to that.
Yeah, sure. You know, the opera really came out of my mom and I's love for Octavia Butler and specifically around that novel, Parable of the Sower. We gave it to each other for Christmas one year and bought one for ourselves. It was really funny. But probably a turn in the road was Toni Morrison asking my mom to teach a semester at Princeton for her Princeton atelier. And my mom not being able to do all the classes and asking me to share half the classes. And that was, you know, I hadn't read the book yet. This was back in 97 or 98. When I bought the book, I read a page of it and I was just I don't want to read this.
Was it that it was too heavy or was
it? The first page, it just felt it was going to be scary. This is the 90s, right? So the book is looking at 2024. So it was still far off. But I was just like, I don't want to know what she thinks about the future. Right, she could be right.
Yeah.
But doing that, we explored the conditions in the book. And we had a lot of ways to do that because there's so much music already created about conditions that showed up in the book. So the book is centered around, you know, a lot of violence, a collapse of government, oppression, and a climate crisis, and kind of futuristic innovation that moves away from humanness and nature towards, you know, how can you speed up profit and how vicious can you be without actually having to put your hands on somebody. So we were able to look at different things. We sang, you know, songs from the Great Flood and, you know, some civil rights things and some spirituals. And then we wrote a couple of things. So it was easy to like kind of map through music a condition in the book. And then that's when we asked, like, can we have rights to the book so we can, you know, see what we can do. My mom was pretty busy after that. So it took like to 2008 until we started to get some rights to work on it. We had a workshop. That didn't work. And then my mom retired in 2014, and she was just like, so what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. I gotta just get it done. But it's my collaborations with Shanta Thake at Joe's Pub at the time and Mayan Wong at Under the Radar. The two of them really are very much responsible for this elevation. You know, they heard three songs from the opera that I kind of snuck into a set at Under the Radar in 2014. And they were like, what is that? They both ran out and read the book, and they were like, you know, encouraged me to go and get the rights. And then in 2015, we did the first kind of circle of, you know, no script or anything, just like a circle of singing the libretto that we had. And then we got the rights to develop it. Like, the estate was very step by step. Okay, if you can do this, then this. If you could do this, then this. And then after I could really feel it, I really got to shout out my bestie, Jacqueline Woodson, because she really is like, you know, one of the engines that very much encouraged me to tell the story. And once I could really feel it, I wanted it to start being in front of people in 2017. And I was like, we need to be out there. We need to do work around this. So many people have their hands on her work that I thought it would be really a great way to like uplift and join together with lots of communities who have great love for her work, but also the conditions. So that really happened. And I developed the Parable Path. And the Parable Path travels around, you know, the opera's become a belly button and the path is the thing. And so I'm always creating in collaboration with people, different projects to keep illuminating this work. And nobody else was doing Octavia's books anywhere, which is still shocking that, once again, we're like the only ones out there. So I'm really hopeful that some of these movies or more TV shows will come out on her work. Just Kindred came and went. So I hope somebody else will do something, but we love it. I think it's a really great way of bringing community together. And when we come together, we actually activating the story. Here we are in this room behind a wall.
Yeah.
And anything can happen.
You know, one of the interesting things about Parable, I mean, you have the collaboration that's happening in, you know, the belly button, as you put it, the actual performance. But then the Parable Path that you created, the way that you collaborate with other artists and the way that you bring together people, I think is just so incredible and special. And it seems to be a significant part of your journey as an artist and as a curator. So I wanted to see what these collaborations, what role they play in your creative process.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really, you know, fans of everybody working to make the world, you know, be working to make us be in alignment better with planet Earth and the universe. I think it's really clear that humanity as a whole is not very well right now, and not very cooperative with the planet and the universe. We're all needing to learn these really complex lessons right now. You know, so I think generational, intergenerational dialogue between cultures of people is really important, so we can keep seeing ourselves in each other and other species on the earth. You know, I'm like, I drive a car, I take an airplane flight, I go to restaurants, and I know I'm operating in systems that are pretty much out of control, because many other ways of being collaborative have become so corporate that, you know, like a hardware store that used to exist is very hard for that person in your community to do it. Things like that. We have this era of humans that are alive right now, no matter what age you are, no matter where you are, no matter what your culture, no matter what language you speak, no matter what your capacity is for existence. We have such a huge opportunity and calling. I think us right now have the most information about the past and indigenous technologies that haven't been wiped out or destroyed. And we have, I think, the most grace towards imagining a future. We're in the place where huge things can happen and we can't, and it's so hard to touch them. The day I saw AI be on every news thing at one time, I was like, oh, they had a meeting.
Yes.
I was everything about to change right now. And it was the next day, everything changed. So you don't even, you're just oppressed already. You don't get to be excited about, oh, this is cute, what can I do with it? You simultaneously excited and they're going to kill me with this, right? And I think that's the thing. I really collaborate with people because I want to learn, my contemporary times, and I want to learn my past, and I want to imagine and guess on the future, and I want to participate and be of service to people. And, what I've learned is that, you got to come together for all of that to happen. And so I always tell people, do you know one other person that's a group? That's a band right there. The two of you, you see me and you've been in my circles. Everybody, they get expansive really quick. People, they become abundant.
Well, that's it right there, I think, is for me, at least my experience with it is that, each of us has a different piece of perspective on the imagination process and perspective on the historical understandings, right? And when we bring all of these different pieces together, it expands our possibility of what can be done with that knowledge, with that wisdom, with that magic, with that craft. And the other piece that I've found to be interesting is that the spaces that you've created have manifested many more spaces and places. You know, so all these different people come together and magic happens. You know, it's like, as artists, we're really doing the work of wanting to use our gifts to the best of our abilities as a contribution towards love and liberation. It is difficult to find those spaces and places that really are in alignment to make our magic happen at the fullest capacity that it can. And to find each other can be really difficult. So what I witness is your ability to help us find each other.
Oh. That's beautiful. That's the best thing. If I'm doing that, then I think I can feel good. I can feel good. I think it's a horrible and great time you know. So many artists are creating that on the same path and doing something that is a calling for them, and then it ends up being something that can nurture and create for so many people. I never thought I would like be in a time where so many friends of mine own land and are growing things, are taking care of land versus, you know, owning or land. So many people are so knowledgeable about, I can pretty much pick up the phone and call somebody and ask a question and get it answered. It's a real abundant time. I think it's hard to imagine that it is with mm-hmm. all of the violence. But that's always been the tool of violence, is to create a lot of doubt and chaos and fear. So, but we know the truth.
And capitalism, you know, often, you know, this hyper individualistic, there is a piece of the work that you do, that we do, that is deeply rooted in generosity. That in order for you to make that phone call, you need to know that somebody who's coming on the other end of the line is ready to give, you know? And that's a big piece of that for me, is just, I appreciate so much your generosity and the generosity of, you know, so many people in my world that are willing to give as much or more than they take, you know, willing to give.
That's right.
I'm curious about what currently inspires and fuels your creative work today, and if there's anything new on the horizon.
I'm inspired all the time. I mean, I am like always have an idea or am thinking of something musical. I record musical ideas 2 or 3 times a day.
Wow, 2 or 3 times a day?
Yeah, I just live in a circle of creation. I really love it. It's so comfortable. I'm also like, think generationally, you know, I heard my mom say one time, like, you know, give your stuff away. Like, don't be like trying to hold on to every little thing. And, you know, I have a big fear of flying. And one time my mom was like, well, what are you afraid of? You afraid you're going to die on a plane? And I was like, hello, yeah. And my mom's like, but the funeral's gonna be so good.
Oh my God.
She's like, we're just gonna be singing so much. It's gonna be awesome. Like, and I think I really just, the other thing she said, you know, was something like, is this some way of thinking about your life is like so precious and perfect that you kind of can't move, or you know, and she's like, but just go ahead and die, because like literally immediately after you die, like everybody just keeps doing whatever it is they're doing. Like, she's like, no, I mean, she's like, it might be those few people are very close to you and they might stop for a little bit, they might shift how they breathe, they might have to mourn, maybe they'll do some kind of journey or ritual. She's like, but then they're hopefully going to get back into their life. And, you know, we're talking about people who are not being absolutely inundated with violence to the point where other mm-hmm. things are happening. It was a way to really make me think about my life as like a beginning and then an epic journey and an ending. She also was like, and honestly, a lot of people do not talk like this. I mean, when I was a kid, she was like, respect your mortality. You know, she's like, you know, you're here and then you will go. And it was said with so much love and amazement. Like, it wasn't like, oh, you could die anytime. You know, be afraid. It was more like, you get to be alive right now. And, you know, if there's joy and if there's a abundance and if there's struggle and if there's the components that make life, if Mother Nature, you know, wiped out your house, like if, you know, all of the things, should, you know, really respect that you are on a living and dying world. It's in a, you know, a vigorous ecosystem. It's constant. We can't even keep up with it. And all of that talk really sunk in with me as a young person. And I really think, like, generationally, you know, like I know you do and lots of our friends, like we are sharing our knowledge and we are wanting to learn from people younger than us, their knowledge. And it's so important. We have to change what humans are stagnated in many ways on what is regular and what is our base of living mm-hmm. that's okay. And we have made agreements with lots of oppression and violence. It's astounding to me that there's more creation in figuring out how to be more oppressive and violent when we've already agreed to like kind of so much of it that has created all of these profits and power for people who we wouldn't actually want to have profits and power. Like, it's just not even our understanding of how we operate. So if you think about it, and I think this is what my mother and some of my ancestors and some of the people I know now, what they're really trying to say is, here's your creativity. And your creativity is your life. And it doesn't matter if you are like a professional artist. It doesn't matter what your task of making currencies is. This is your creativity and this is your life. And thank you for it. You know?
Yes.
So I'm in a yes. state of creativity. Yes. I feel aligned with a lot of people, and it happens to be also my job that I do and my contribution mm-hmm. To the planet. And let's see, you asked New Work. New Work is so much, I'm always evolving the parable stuff. So I have a Songs of the Living all volunteer community choir, a Songs of the Living community sings, circles, things like that. I have a piece based on the journey of disco called You're Having Too Much Fun, So We're Gonna Have to Kill You. That's in workshop. I have a piece mm-hmm. called Working on a Building. That's in process. And I made my company Wise Regan Arts, which produces parable and pretty much all of my work, so that I could create more circles and collaborations with other
that's
folks.
Exciting. That is so exciting. At the top of the show, we talked about the heavy, you know, some of the heavy things that are happening right now. What advice might you have as a mentor, as an educator, for other emerging artists who are seeking to use their art to address these issues?
If you have an idea that you want to put forward to do it, not to think like any way that you do it is like a wrong way. Like if it's small and intimate, it's good. If it happens to take like a bunch of jumps and next thing you know, you're doing your work in these different ways. You know, your line of integrity around your heart and around your, you know, life path. What I really understand is, you know, when people come into the world as young little babies and then they grow, they see things different from the generations ahead of them. Like their snapshot is different. And, you know, as you live, I think you're always grounded in kind of your first snapshots, you know, like with the first things that you, you know, I'm always grounded by the idea of like these. Now, what I now understand is young people kind of making the transition from their being on the front line streets of a civil rights movement and figuring out like how to take care of their families, and all these women who went to school like my mom did. And I'm so grounded by the culture of those communities. It's not that I try to make those communities myself. I'm like really different, but I'm grounded in that. I know that that exists, you know? And so, I saw so many beginnings of things, you know, just being a queer person. I'm really grounded in like, you know, lesbian separatism in some ways. It wasn't my path, but it was so badass. Like, I don't know, people are going to get really offended by it. But if it wasn't around in the 70s, you know, I mean, it was just going to places that would like, you know, never have women doing anything like, you know, like, so it was bad, yeah. You know, so, which is not the same as talking about some of the ways that people identify, you know, lesbians who have not been supportive of our relatives in the trans and non-binary communities. It's not mm-hmm. the same. But I really was like yeah. seeing it was outrageous. It was just outrageous. You know, they were like, we're going to do a show and no men can come. It was outrageous. And it was outrageous to a community mm-hmm. of people that always, who didn't make space for women at all. You know, at women mm-hmm. or children at all. Mm. Differently able people at all. Like, mm. so once they started getting like mm. these tiny places of being told no, it was really interesting. So I, you know, to be like 13 year old, witnessing that really made me understand oppression in a way that, you know, I maybe didn't. The no nukes movement when I was a kid, I'm grounded in that. So I think like wherever you, when you have those snapshots that like really kind of give you identifying things, then it really like opens up over the course of your life as really why it's important to like have generations that are meeting the moment in the time of their youth to tell you what they're seeing and give voice to them, because they see something different from you. In a way different from you. And it's really helpful. Really, really helpful. So I just am aware I'm supposed to be available. I try to have iterations of 10 years, people younger than me, that I'm available for. Like some of them are like, will you mentor me? Will you do this for me? And then some of them, I just tell me what to do, you know, for them. Right. And I think that's really important. That's a model to me from, you know, it's an indigenous model, especially around growing food, is that, you know, you had a place in that in your community. I remember my grandparents, when I would go visit in the summer, she always had little jobs for us, no matter how little we were. They weren't overwhelming, but you know what I mean? Like, go get this, right. Go do this, go do that little jobs. Yeah, yeah. And then, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, you're eating like a watermelon that grew. And that's to me an analogy for like how to have wisdom passed down, passed up, passed around to give voice to communities. And in all of that is creativity. I think that's like, I think that's like really important. It's so important. And I'll say one more thing, you know, I think one of the things that's the most heartbreaking around, you know, in particular, the war on Gaza and the war on the Palestinian people is the inability for people to see themselves in these situations. And I think that's what war does, is it makes you not be able to see yourself. So that you can just constantly be like somebody else's deserving of the atrocities. It's an unnatural state of being. And I think it will only lead to more destruction of everybody. And I really hope that we can stop saying okay to things that we would never want to happen to us. Right. We, with all of our strength and creativity and transformational powers, transform our governments into thinking that it is ever okay for them to spend the currencies that we have all created together on the demise of a people and on the demise of the planet.
Right. You know, one of the things I think about in terms of the magic that is music is addressing that specific piece around not being able to feel. You know, our emotions oftentimes get churned off. And there's like, in my opinion, there's a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. Some are survival mechanisms. Art for me is my way of allowing myself to open and an offering for others to open. You know, we can't take those actions unless we feel the urgency.
That's right.
So do you feel music helps to do that for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, music is helps me do everything. I ain't done nothing but been a musician my entire life. I'm really grateful. I'm so grateful. I can't even tell you. It really helps me. I have very few answers to the state of the world right now, the bad parts. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a little stunned, mm-hmm. you know, to be honest. And I think after reading Octavia for so long and researching in real time, like the things that she did, looking at her research, just over the years, I'm stunned that we're like doing all the things and plus that she imagined that we would do.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that it's such a cycle. Mm-hmm. The cycle we're in without some really abrupt and like, you know, determination to stop it activity is like a cycle that will last into the 30s.
That's right.
I think we're like moseying along and, you know, with it, you know, but at some point we have to do like the most daring things. Mm-hmm. I think that is, I'm just astonished. So whatever I'm doing, I'm going to be singing at the same time. Yes. And,
and I'll be singing with you every chance I get.
Oh my God, please. I'm going to call you. Look, I'm going to buy my birthday concerts. That's the next thing that's coming up. It's a birthday concert. I need you to come down.
I'm ready for that call and any call. Anytime you call, I'm ready for it. I'm so grateful to you, Toshi.
I love you so much.
I love you so much. You are so awesome. You are so brilliant. I always use that word with you, brilliant, because that to me is really the epitome of you. You shine so bright and lift up this world in so many ways with that brilliance. So thank you. Thank you for your generosity today and always.
Always. I'm here for you.
That concludes this episode of The Rhythm of Rebellion featuring the brilliant Toshi Regan. I want to thank Toshi so much for sharing her wisdom and passion for music and the imagination with us today. You can stay connected with Toshi Regan and explore more of her impactful work on Facebook at Toshi Regan and Big Lovely, on Instagram at BigLovely101, or at ToshiRegan.com. I'm your host, Taina Seely. You can keep up with my work on Instagram and YouTube at Taina Seely, on Facebook at Taina Seely Music, or on my website at TainaAseely.com. All these links will be shared in the show notes. Many thanks to our editor, Moses Nagel, and Sina Basila Hickey at Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave your thoughts about the podcast. Your feedback is invaluable and helps us to continue to bring you these thought-provoking conversations. Until next time, peace, love, and liberation.